Hello and welcome to the Classic Car Weekly podcast, the sibling podcast to the popular weekly title. I'm the staff writer, Jesse Billington, and I'm joined by the editor, David Simister, and the managing editor, James Sadlier. How are we, gentlemen?
We are good. Good.
Enjoying a sunny February day for all of us as well, actually. We've got...
It's cold, though. I wanted to get a bit warmer so I can go out and enjoy my classic more. It's not warm enough to... I don't know. David's probably got a better idea of whether it's warm enough to put the top down in the MX-5 or not.
Do you know, I went for a wander early and it is still quite chilly. But the great thing is the MX-5 is renowned for its fantastically efficient heater. So if I do go out and put the roof down, I should at least be able to stay warm.
That is fair enough. Meanwhile, I still have no heater. I do have heater hoses for the Jimny. They've just arrived at Suzuki, so I shall go and pick them up at some point soon. And need to actually order the replacement heater matrix. Meanwhile, the engine is still at the machine shop. They've essentially all had to take a week off because they all got COVID and there was no one in there. I feel very bad for disturbing the one very sickly sounding gentleman on the phone to ask how progress was, to which the answer was slow, because we were all sort of hanging on for dear life. But there we go. So it's been another quiet week for our classics, it seems.
Well, no, my Polo's been in the garage again. Mm.
Oh, what now?
Yeah, it's the exhaust again. So it was rattling after they reattached it. It was kind of rattling on like low revs when the car would vibrate a little bit more. And it turns out, I can't remember the name of the part in the exhaust, but they said it's only one part of the exhaust that's kind of come loose inside it. So nothing's going to fall off. And he said, I'm absolutely fine to drive it, but it's just a bit rattly. And they said, you probably want to get it fixed at some point. So I'm just having a look now. It was the exhaust baffle. Baffle. You ever heard of that?
Yeah. So that'll sit somewhere towards sort of a mid or back muffler that will be just sort of taking a bit of the noise out of it.
It actually worked out that it's probably cheaper to just buy a whole new exhaust rather than just buy one part of it.
Probably.
I can't actually find any like official Volkswagen parts, but I can certainly find I can find brand new non-Volkswagen spares on eBay or other auction sites are available. Sorry, what are you going to say, David?
Yes, I was going to say, you are used to driving around with your Polo making embarrassing noises, but at least this isn't as bad as the horn tooting at every other corner.
Yeah, that's definitely less embarrassing. You can only, no one else would be able to hear it, really. It's just I can hear it. But I've also managed to source a couple of, a spare seat for a new front seat and a new door card. Well, it's actually the entire interior, apart from the dashboard. It's all the door cards. All the seats. I only need one, but I sense I'm going to have to buy the lot. But it's a reasonable price, so I can maybe just have one driver's seat and one door card installed, and then maybe just store the others in my shed or garage. Mm. And then when I come to sell the car, I've got some extra spares, I guess.
Yeah, a whole sort of bundle of spares to sort of flog it with. That's quite good. I was going to say, the interior when we did London Brighton last year was pretty good, Nick, actually. It was a rather well-presented example, one would say. So
yeah. Well, as David knows, it's like the rest of it looks almost brand new, I'd say. But it's just that driver's seat has just it's almost disintegrated, I'd say. Foam has really kind of just disappeared. And the door card is where all the kind of... concave bits that come out from they've just kind of flattened, and it's barely a door card now. So it's just odds and ends that I'm doing just to kind of keep it looking fresh, really.
Little jobs to stay on top of it, but there we go, our classics drop in. Meanwhile though, James, we'll stick with you because you have been a busy boy. We'll jump into the main element of this week's podcast, as you've been off to Retromobile, and obviously the main coverage of this is in the issue that will be on shop shelves. But you care to share with us any sort of behind the scenes stories, sort of getting there and back? What did you get up to in Paris, and some of your favorite cars that you saw on the stages and stands?
Well, actually, one of my favourite cars was an authentic Toyota RAV4 electric from 1996, probably, and it predates the Prius, believe it or not, you know. So, and I've, who was it who drove, someone famous, I think someone like Mel Gibson used to drive one around Los Angeles back in the mid-90s, but it was an authentic one with hardly any around anymore. And it was just, it was something a bit out there, a little bit unique. Getting there was a piece of cake, really. It was just literally Eurostar to Paris, and then the metro. So for listeners wanting to go next year, it really is quite easy. Getting through customs this side is easy. Not so much the Paris side. They tend to do triple the amount of checks that the Brits do. But anyway, that's by the by. The show is fantastic, and you need at least 2 days to go around it to really appreciate it. And it seems like, to me, it's always like feels like a show of two halves, with the kind of the dealer halls with all, you know, and the kind of the big brands like Citroën and Renault have got these grand kind of well-lit stands. Citroën had a fantastically presented stand, and everything looks fabulous. It's the best version of every car you could possibly find, you know, in that side of it. And big money as well. We were talking almost in the millions for some, or not almost, lots of them were in the millions, but a lot of them. And then you've got the other side of the hall, the other side of the event, which is, you know, kind of cars for sale and clubs, which, you know, you're looking on the more kind of, you know, even 10 grand would be considered quite a lot per car. You know, but there's a lot for sale there. It's definitely a good place to go and buy a car. And the, you know, the clubs were good, and there's some good anniversaries celebrated there.
Yeah. So so you can say, what was sort of a standout display? What was the most intriguing? Because obviously they really push the boat out when it comes to a lot of the retro sort of designs. I know Citroën was sort of a big flagship for it this year.
Yeah, the biggest one this year was 130 years of the Skoda in or Skoda in motor cars, 130 years, and they had almost a unique example from every era. One you'd think, oh, I didn't know Skoda did that. You know, it wasn't just your typical. There's a Fabia or Fabia or whatever. It was, you know, kind of a racing car from one era and a kind of all terrain vehicle from another era, and even bicycles. But that was probably the focus. You know, the focal point of the show. But Fever were there, and they were quite enlightening with regards to the classic car world these days. And they were almost celebrating just how inclusive the classic car world is now. You know, about 10 years ago, it did used to be a fairly kind of a gentleman's kind of hobby, and now it's in the last 10 years they've noticed it's become a lot more family orientated, and events are making organizers are making their events much more family orientated, and even as much as there are, you know, women's only tours going on around Europe now, and there's a lot more women in kind of have in apprenticeships now, learning kind of how to, you know, pull a car apart and put it back together again and restore. And there's a lot of input into kind of getting the next generation into classics. And where about, say, 10 years ago, you'd go to a car show, and I think this is still the case, but there's a lot of encouragement to go up and touch cars and sit in them and be able to be a bit more tactile with them. Whereas before, you know, there's a lot of like, oh, yeah, I mustn't touch this. It's a, you know, costs a lot of money, and it's still the case with some of the expensive cars, I should imagine. But there's certainly a lot more encouragement to kind of, you know, get the next generation and into classics. So that was quite encouraging.
Fever, of course, being the UN for cars, if you like. It's the big global organization that represents historic vehicle enthusiasts, and it has member organizations across the world, including our very own FBHVC here in the UK. So they play a very important role in making sure that the cars that we love can stay on the roads here in Paris, right around the world, actually. So I know they had a very strong presence at the show. And how did you think, James, it's compared to our very own classic motor show at the NEC.
I'd just go as far. I'd say there's, I'm not going to, I can't say anything negative about the NEC show because it's absolutely fantastic and I love it every year. But differences, I'd say Retromobile possibly had a little bit more variety and a bit more, you know, there's a diverse range of classics there from the really low end to the really high end in values and unique models. Maybe I think a lot of that is because Paris is quite central to a lot of European countries and there's like the access to it there is possibly, you know, more central for Europe potentially. And also there's a lot of kind of big brands there. You know, you've got Citroën, Renault, and obviously Skoda. There was Mazda and you know, it was really the brands over there go really big. And celebrate their history. So that's quite special. So that's how I feel it differs. But the other thing, on a side note, we're going back to Fever again. One of the stories in this issue is the new parts database that they're launching with membership, which allows anyone with a classic car linked to the Fever database, you'll be able to find any spare part, even if it's not in production, find out the part number, the identification. But more often than not, they'll find that there is one sitting there somewhere in a manufacturer or factory somewhere, and they'll be able to locate it. And they launched that at Retromobile. They said they did a soft launch at Interclassics in Maastricht, but a hard launch at Retromobile. Apparently it's now live to the point where even someone put it to the test and they had a I think it was a V8 Range Rover that was very particular to their country, and they're looking for the V8 logo, the badge that went on the back, and he didn't have any more, and he couldn't find one for years, went onto this database and found two. So it's quite a positive story if you pick up a copy of Classic Car Weekly this week.
You never know, they might even have an exhaust baffle for a second generation Polo.
I'd need to join Fever though to have this luxury. So maybe that's the next thing I do. But yes, so I'd say yeah. I don't know if that answers your question or not about how different say Retromobile is to the NEC, which NEC is fantastic. I would just go as far as to say it's probably a more of a diverse range of classics on show.
Sort of Retromobile is a bit more sort of dealery as much as it is sort of clubs and things. It's more sort of an equal split, whereas I'd say NEC shows are sort of far more club led, and then there is
definitely
a
more club led.
Yeah,
you have to really find the clubs at the Retromobile. They are there, but they aren't maybe as celebrated as they are at the NEC, which is fantastic. So you can walk around the NEC and you've just got this warm, welcoming feeling as you kind of go and speak to them. It's lovely.
And interesting that it's a record attendance as well, which I think is a really encouraging sign for our hobby. Certainly have seen some of the bigger shows sort of here and on the continent having really good results. I know, which is a positive thing, because I know that, you know, events have been challenged, some of them, over the past few years or so with things like the cost of living crisis and so on.
Yeah, and it was Retromobile was up 12% on visitor figures from the year before, which is a huge jump from 1 year.
Mm.
And I know before I'd found out that figure, I was there. They have a late night opening at Retromobile to 10 p.m. on the Friday. And was it the Saturday? I can't remember which day now. And normally that's my time to kind of go and have a look around and not, you know, have a bit of space to see everything without the huge crowds and go at that off-peak time. But even up until 10, it was still really busy, and that felt very different to previous years, which, you know, it's great really that there are so many. And it was a lot, as I mentioned earlier, there was a lot of families there compared to, I noticed, to previous years, which is, it felt great to have that, you know, inclusivity.
It's interesting because I know the Classic Auto Show at the NEC last year, they had a big drive towards having family-friendly stands, and that's something they've really embraced over the last couple of years. So it does seem to be that appealing to the whole family does seem to be the way for these big car shows to go. It's not just like blokes shuffling around of a Saturday afternoon anymore. It's you got to make sure you're appealing to the wife, the kids, the whole family these days to make sure you're getting the most enthusiast there possible.
Yeah, and they know what they're doing. There is definitely more merchandise stands this year than before as well. So they know that there's money to be made with you spot the car you like and you go and find the model of it for your son or grandson after. It was, it was quite big on that. But it was brilliant. And a big celebration of 75 years of Formula One, which had a token Formula One car from almost every kind of 5-year period, I'd say. It was in a kind of gorgeous semicircle, so you could kind of almost take a walk through time.
Ooh, do like that. Especially a lot of them from the picture seem to have sort of a nice F1 sort of, or French sort of Formula One twist to them. So you've got sort of Renault or Peugeot engines, you're looking at teams that are French in and of themselves. So that must have been quite a nice little display to really sort of spend some time poring over. But when you say about sort of people going along, certainly across sort of social media, it seemed for people my age, my generation, that Retromobile is sort of now one of the shows to be seen at as well. It's sort of become a sort of big highlight of the young person's classic car calendar. So there's a good signs for it yet, as sort of the next generation is certainly warming to it and making it sort of something to get along to and really make the most of.
And they were, there was a big celebration of, well, not celebration, but they were kind of encouraging the next generation to look beyond the cars that they remember growing up and look at the kind of maybe the pre-war cars that are maybe not quite as popular as they once were, and to kind of encourage that interest that it doesn't always have to be, the cars you remember growing up, they really are kind of saying that these are great cars to drive around. They're quite, there's not, and they're not kind of engulfed with too much technology. So if you want to get your hands dirty, you can as well. I know we've mentioned that in previous podcasts, but Retromobile certainly did kind of promote that kind of next generation getting interested into the all areas of classics, whatever, and it's very much what floats your boat, and kind of go and have a look around and see what piques your interest, really.
It's great news then from the European scene, and we'll move back to our own shores and a show that's coming up, the Resto show at the NEC, and importantly the National Car Club Awards. David, this is something that you have a strong hand in.
Well, yeah, I'm one of the judges. So, yes, the National Car Club Awards is held during the Practical Classics Classic Car and Restoration Show. And the awards are presented on the live stage on the Saturday evening. So this is a really big chance for the car clubs to shine, to show us all the things that they've been doing. It's judged by myself. It's judged by Danny Hopkins, who's the editor of our sister magazine, Practical Classics, and David Whale, who is the chairman of the Federation of British Historic Vehicle Clubs. And there are three different types of categories, so it's worth just sort of going through them very quickly. The first one is the special merit awards, if you like, and these are the things where they lock the three of us in a room and tell us to pick the best, clubs that have celebrated events, best ones that have supported the next generation. There's six of those awards. There's also a slew of awards that are being judged on the opening day of the show. So if you see a blur that vaguely resembles me, that's what I'm doing on the first day of the restoration show, going around and looking at every single stand in one day and picking out some of the winners for those awards. But the really big one to mention is the Club Hero of the Year Award. And this is one that's picked by you guys. It's the readers of Classic Car Weekly, the listeners to the podcast, and all of those who follow Classic Car Weekly. If you are a member of a car club, we want to hear from you. If you've got someone you know in the car club who is they are the absolute hero of your, they might be somebody who's been there for decades, They are the backbone of what your club does. They organise events. They, you know, they make sure that people get spares for their cars. We want to hear about them because these guys are the oil that keeps the classic car movement going. So we've had some fantastic winners in the past, but we want to hear from you, from all of you, to see who is going to be our hero of the year for 2025. So it's going to be a really good celebration of everything that car clubs do. And that's the icing on the cake of what I think is one of my favourite shows of the year, because the restoration show again, like James, I love the Classic Motor Show in November, but this is very much, it's a very get your hands dirty, see cars that are being restored and actually see, you know, the fruits of previous labour coming to fruition. And you see all these wonderful cars that have, you know, had lots of love and attention lavished on them that finally being unveiled for the first time.
It is a brilliantly dynamic show. I sort of took part in it quite actively last year. I had the MG on the Midget Sprite Club stand. And yeah, I think it went down as sort of one of my highlights of the year, being able to sort of work with the club and sort of the camaraderie of it and the fun of sort of doing all these things under the sort of time constraints of getting it all done by the end of the show weekend, which was a story in and of itself. But even then, it was just nice to be sort of a part of that atmosphere. We'll go back to the awards quickly. What's the deadline for the I think it's people have got a month to nominate their club heroes, haven't they, David?
Yeah, so it's the 12th of March. I'm just going to triple check that date. Yes, just before midnight on Wednesday the 12th of March, which is a fortnight from now. So again, we'll mention it again in next week's issue too. But again, any sort of anyone, any person, man, woman, child, you know, who's done something fantastic for your car club over the past year or over many previous years, we want to hear about them. Tell us what it is that makes them fantastic, and we'll look forward to getting their name in dazzling lights.
Excellent stuff. I mean, I've already started sort of putting together some interesting bits and pieces for what to look forward to at the restoration show. And I know that one of the Lotus Club stands have got one of the original Lotus Elite press cars that's pretty much been pulled out of a bush somewhere and is being brought along. So the interesting stories of all things to be seen at the show are already starting to emerge. So it's looking like a great show to get along to and attend, along with the awards we've already mentioned.
Definitely. It's a real, if you haven't been before, it's an absolute treat to go to. And if you are around on the Saturday, make sure you stick around for the Car Club Awards, because seeing these guys being recognised, that for me is one of the highlights of the show.
Always absolutely. A brilliant way. Yeah, brilliant way to sort of round out the Saturday. And then there's always the fun and rush of the Sunday, especially if you've got a car on a stand. You want to be there for 6 o'clock when it's the all horns blaring as the show officially closes. It is quite something indeed. But that brings us neatly to a close on this week's podcast, a short and sweet one, as we've all got plenty to crack on with this week. And I'm off to Race Retro this weekend, another busy weekend of show attendance and plenty to pick up. So looks like we should have some sound weather for it, which not exactly a high bar compared to last year's, mind. Gents, what else we got on the calendar for this week?
You first, David.
For me, I think I'm going to be mucking around with the MX-5 again and getting it ready for Drive It Day.
Excellent. Sounds like a very good plan.
And I'm taking the mighty Polo on a bit of a journey, a bit of a trip all the way down to Devon, which if you live in Devon, it's not very far, but I'm all the way up in deepest, darkest Lincolnshire. So it's a good 5 hours there and a good 5 hours back. So yeah, I'll be treating that to a nice long run out and enjoying that, taking that to the kind of south coast of Devon.
So look forward to reading about that jaunt in a future Our Classic section. And of course, we'll be back next week with more bonus Classic Car Weekly content. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me today.
Good to
thank you.
And like I said, we'll be back in a week. Obviously, be sure to pick up the latest issue, or even better, subscribe so you never miss a copy.